Welcome to the Shir and Targumim, Parshas Achrimos. The Shir this evening is sponsored by Elke and Joel Hershkovitz, marking the yard site tonight of her father, Chaim Schleifrig. The Shomer should have an aliyah, should see Moshe Nachasuach, and the Torah Mitzvahs and Ma'isim Tovim, that the family is involved in. There is a translation of the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel towards the end of Parshas Achrimos that is widely discussed in the Achronim. On the surface, this translation of the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel seems to run counter to a Mishnah. It's the second time we're finding it in this particular parsha we had earlier, where the Mishnah seems to say that the Ish-Iti would push the Sar HaMishtaleach off the cliff. The Targum Yonasan ben Uziel seems to just suggest otherwise, that it was carried off the cliff by a ruach, by a wind. The Targum Yonasan ben Uziel we're about to see tonight is even seemingly a more explicit contradiction to a explicit Mishnah in Maseches Megillah. We'll see how the Achronim, maybe even the Rishonim, deal with this seeming contradiction. And it will be a very interesting opening, we'll see, to discussing how Targumim are supposed to work in general. So in Perek Yud Ches, we have the Parsha of the Arayos, where the Torah goes through the prohibited relationships that one is not allowed to engage in. And after going through most of the prohibited relationships, we find in Perek Yud Ches Pasuk Chaf Aleph the following Pasuk. U'mizarecha lo sitein lahavir lamolech. You should not take from your children to pass and to give over to the molech. The molech was a type of avodah zarah that was worshipped in the time of the Tanakh. It involved parents taking a child and passing the child through fire. There's a debate among the Rishonim whether that meant killing the child, in other words, subjecting the child, lo aleinu, to being put to death by the fire, you know, burning the child alive, or whether it was something on a certain level somewhat more innocuous than that, just taking the child and ritually passing the child through two fires that were on either side of the child. In other words, he walked between the fires, but wasn't actually burnt to death, you know, with the fire. Either way, the act of bringing the child to Molech was an act of sacrifice. In other words, it was a way of worshipping the Avodah Zarah called the Molech. So the Pasuk says, "Mizarech halosite la'avir la'molech." You're not allowed to take your children and offer them in whatever way one would do so as a sacrifice to the Molech. What this Pasuk is doing here in a discussion of the Arayos is something that we'll come to in just a moment. Yeah.
It's also a little bit superfluous, because first of all, it's murder, mm-hmm. and it's about the Zara, so we already have the Surah of Health.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So the Targum Onkelos just translates the Pasuk in a literal fashion. That's almost a literal translation in Aramaic of the Hebrew. You should not take from your child, from your son, to pass through the Molech. But if we look at the Yonasan ben Uziel, he gives a much more complicated, complex way of understanding the Pasuk. He writes as follows. U'minzarach lo sitein b'tashmishta litzeid bas amimin. You should not you should not create any children by having relations with a daughter of foreigners, in other words, a non-Jewish woman, lemi abra, such that she becomes pregnant, lepochana nechra'a, such that she becomes pregnant and has a child who will engage in pulchana nechra'a, in foreign worship. In other words, the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel basically translates this pasuk as prohibiting a Jewish man from having relations with a non-Jewish woman. Of course, we know that if a Jewish man has relations with a non-Jewish woman, the child who is going to be born halachically is not considered to be Jewish. So essentially, How do you get this back into the pasuk? Essentially, the man who's having relations with the non-Jewish woman is making her pregnant. Laha'avir. The word laha'avir literally means to pass, but the word ibur, it means pregnancy in Hebrew, so it's a play on words. So mizarecha lo siteng laha'avir. Don't give from your seed, not your seed in the sense of your children, but in other words, your seed in terms of your semen, in a very, very literal way. Don't give from your seed to a non-Jewish woman, laha'avir, such that she will become pregnant, lamolech, and the child that she's going to have is going to be halachically non-Jewish, and presumably is going to be raised as a non-Jew, and is going to be involved in non-Jewish, in foreign worship, in Avodah Zarah. So in other words, this is a pasuk, according to the Targum Yonos HaMeruziyo, prohibiting intermarriage. That's a very interesting, fascinating interpretation. Certainly not the literal interpretation. Per se, the fact that it's not a literal interpretation wouldn't necessarily bother us. We've seen plenty of stuff in the Targum Yonos HaMeruziyo so far, which is not a literal translation of the psukim. The problem with this particular translation is that it seems to run afoul of an explicit Mishnah in Maseches Megillah. The Mishnah in Maseches Megillah Daf Chaf Hei Omer Aleph says, Ha'omer, somebody who translates the Pasuk as follows, Mizarech Alositein Lahavir Lamolech, somebody who translates that Pasuk as, Lo sitein liv a'avara ba'armiyusa, don't give to enable an aramusa. A aramusa is literally an Aramean. It's a term for a non-Jewish woman. Don't enable a non-Jewish woman to become pregnant. If somebody translates the pasuk in that fashion, mishaskin oso benezifa, we strenuously silence that person from making such a translation, right? We yell at that person and tell him that you're translating the pasuk incorrectly, and be quiet. Don't translate the way in such a don't translate the pasuk in such a fashion. On the surface, this Mishnah is saying that you should not translate the pasuk the way that the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel translates the pasuk. So what exactly are we supposed to do with that? Just to underscore the point a little bit more, let's see Rashi and his comments on this Mishnah. The Mishnah on the words Ha'omer Mizarech Alositein Lahavir Lamolech. Somebody who translates that pasuk, says Rashi, as Lo Savo Al Hakusis. Don't have relations with a kusis, which is a general term for a non-Jewish woman. V'soli Bein La'Avodah Zarah, such that you will have a child with her who is given over to Avodah Zarah, someone who translates the pasuk in that way. Mishaskin oso benezifa, the Mishnah says we violently, we strenuously silence that person from translating the pasuk in such a fashion. How so? So says Rashi, she'oker akosuv mimashma'o. The person who translates the pasuk in the way that the Yonos ben Uziel does, in other words, he translates the pasuk as referring to intermarriage as opposed to an idolatrous practice, he's uprooting the pasuk from its simple meaning. Shehu avodas chok le'emorim. The simple meaning of the pasuk is describing an idolatrous practice. Lahavir b'neim lo'esh, to give over their children to the fire in this kind of way. V'nosen kores labo al hakusis. Umechayiv chatos al hashogeg, umisas bezdin al hamezid behasra'a. No, so you translate the pasuk as prohibiting intermarriage. What's wrong with that? What are we against? Is there something wrong with prohibiting intermarriage? What would be terrible if you translate the pasuk as prohibiting intermarriage? So says Rashi, what's so terrible about that is that you walk away with a mistaken understanding of the halacha, not in terms of the fact that you're allowed to intermarry, you're certainly not allowed to intermarry, but what's the punishment for intermarriage? Right? So all of the various Isurim that are described here in Perek Yud Ches and Achreimos carry with them the punishment at least of Kares. And if a person, some of them carry with them the punishment of Misas Bezdin, of being put to death by the Bezdin. And if a person performs these Averos Bishogeg, so if he performs them unintentionally, he has to bring a Karbon Chatos. None of those punishments are relevant in the case of intermarriage. The Rambam actually has a fascinating passage by intermarriage, where the Rambam says, you should know, on a technical level, the punishment for a man intermarrying with a Jewish woman is actually much less of a prohibition than many of the other prohibited relations that a Jewish man is allowed to have. I mean, just to put it in context, if a Jewish man has relations with a Jewish woman who is a Nida, that carries with it the punishment of Kares, whether or not the two of them are married to one another. In contrast, if a Jewish man has relations with a non-Jewish woman, or even marries a non-Jewish woman, so that's not subject to the penalty of Kares. So on a very, very narrow, from a very narrow perspective, a person might say, huh, so if I have a choice between sleeping with a woman who's a Jewish woman who's a Nida versus sleeping with a non-Jewish woman, which one should I pick? You know, if I have to do one Avera, the lesser Avera would seem to be intermarriage. I mean, that would seem to emerge from a very narrow reading of the sources. So is that correct? So says the Rambam, absolutely not, because there are certain Averos which in a technical sense may not carry with them such a terrible punishment, but these Averos undermine Yiddishkeit, they undermine Judaism. If a man's going to marry a non-Jewish woman, so it's going to break apart all of Judaism. And again, on a certain level, not so much in our own generation, unfortunately, but certainly going back 2-3 generations, even Jews who were very secular and would think nothing of having relations with a woman who is a Nida understood that intermarriage was something that was going to, you know, rip Judaism apart. So that's the Rambam writes. You know, you can't always tell which is the worst Avera, which is the worst Avera based on what the punishment necessarily is. Sometimes you have to take a broader look. A broader look shows you that if a man's going to have enter into an intermarriage with a non-Jewish woman, he's got to have relations with a non-Jewish woman, the long-term consequences of that are devastating. He's undermining Yiddishkeit. You know, as opposed to saying, you know, there are Averos which are technically worse, but, you know, the person is still part of the structure of the Jewish people. Yeah.
What about the Kares with Divrei Kabbalah, which is more Pasuk in Malachi, Gashmish Hashem?
You're saying like the Kanoin Pogan bow? In other words,
the Kares with Divrei Kabbalah, which...
Which Pasuk are you referring to?
Gashmish Hashem, Lo Yelo Er Ba'ona...
But I guess I'll kopon him. That's but I'll kopon him. It's not a kares kares. In other words, it's still on a lesser madrega than. But acher kachlos hakol. The Rambam's point is still a point. Meaning, you know, if you're going to measure these two averos next to one another from a very technical perspective, the iser nida is worse than the iser of intermarriage.
And there's a nashkaz issue.
I mean, there are issues, but every issue... I'm not saying that it's a good thing to get intermarried. But relatively speaking, there are worse averos when you look at it from the narrow perspective of what's the onesh, right? What's the punishment? However, the Rambam is saying you can't look at it from that perspective. In other words, you have to look at the broader perspective that, you know, the person who is, you know, entering into an intermarriage is doing something broader that's undermining Yiddishkeit. I'll kopon him.
But it leads the person to distance himself more.
Right. No, 100%. So I'll kopon him. Rashi, however, says if you interpret this pasuk, "Mizaru chalosita nahavi olam molech," is talking about intermarriage, you end up saying that the sin of intermarriage is punishable by kares and a karban chatos, which it's not. So by translating the pasuk in this way, you've essentially falsified Torah. That's Rashi's point. There's a famous Marashal in Bava Kamma where the Marashal says that the penalty for falsifying Torah is misa bidei shamayim, right? A person is subject to heavenly death for falsifying the words of Torah. Even those who don't necessarily agree with the Marshal would certainly agree. You're not supposed to falsify words of Torah, even if it doesn't carry that punishment necessarily. Al Kaponim, that seems to be Rashi's objection over here to this kind of Targum. If you're being metargim the Pasuk in this fashion, you're ultimately assigning a punishment to intermarriage, which is not halachically correct, which is not true. And you can't, you know, you can say a drasha in a Pasuk that adds a nice idea or a nice flavor, but you can't make a drasha that's ultimately going to lead you to an incorrect halachic conclusion. And that's what's happening over here. Al Kaponim, so then we have to ask the question. So if the Gemara, if the Mishnah is saying that translating the Pasuk in this fashion is prohibited, so how can the Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel come along and do exactly that? So there's an answer which is offered by a couple of the classic Achronim over here to try to explain this Yonasan Ben Uziel. This answer is given by the Marsha, right here in Megillah Daf Chafei. It's given by the Tosfos Yom Tov and the Mishnayos over here. It's also quoted approvingly by the Tiferes Yisrael. The basic gist of the answer is as follows. The Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel is not working with Rashi's interpretation of the Mishnah. He has the right to do that. A Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel who argues on a Mishnah is in a very precarious position. But if there are different ways to interpret the Mishnah, if Rashi is only one way of interpreting the Mishnah, and the Targum Yonasan Ben Uziel can interpret the Mishnah otherwise, so then, okay, then he has a leg to stand on.
So he's not really arguing on the Mishnah.
How else can you interpret the Mishnah? So the Marsha, the Tosfos Yom Tov, and the Tiferes Yisrael all quote the following passage from the Aruch. The Aruch was Reb Nosson of Rome. It's a very early Rishon, I think a contemporary of Rashi, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe even a little bit before Rashi. And the Aruch is bothered by the following passage in the Gemara, that same Gemara, Chafei Amud Aleph. So after the Mishnah has said its piece, the Gemara has the following very enigmatic comment. Tana Devei Rebbe Yishmael. It was taught in the name of the Beis Medrash of Rebbe Yishmael. B'Yisrael habol akusis v'holid mimeno ben la'avod azara kosov medaber. It was taught in the name of Rabbi Yishmael. The Pasuk is speaking about a Jewish man who has relations with a non-Jewish woman and has a child, and that child is devoted to Avodah Zarah. That's what the Pasuk is talking about. I don't understand. You just told me in the Mishnah that's not what the Pasuk is talking about. And in fact, if you translate the Pasuk is talking about that case where you're intermarrying, so it's a terrible thing, and we should tell the guy who's giving such a translation that he should be quiet. So now comes the Gemara, he says, oh, by the way, and Rabbi Yishmael holds that actually that is the way you translate the Pasuk. And there's zero comment in the Gemara beyond that. The Gemara doesn't say, oh, well, how does Rabbi Yishmael argue with the Mishnah, you know? There's zero comment in the Gemara. So we're left hanging, how does Rabbi Yishmael interface with the Mishnah over here? So Rashi's comment, again, consistent with what Rashi said before, is as follows. L'faresh masnisin b'Yisrael habol akusis hakosav medaber. All the Gemara means to say by quoting Rabbi Yishmael is Rabbi Yishmael's explaining what it is that the Mishnah is saying you shouldn't do. In other words, Rabbi Yishmael is not interpreting the Mishnah, is not interpreting the Pasuk. Rabbi Yishmael is interpreting the Mishnah. When the Mishnah says, Lo siten la'abar ba'amra yusa, what it means is, don't get married with a non-Jewish woman and have a child with her. And Rabbi Yishmael is saying, and it's that translation that the Mishnah rejects, that you can't give that translation. So all he's doing is really reinforcing the Mishnah. But it doesn't sound like that. I mean, to be honest, it doesn't sound like that from the Gemara itself. So the Aruch proposes a different way to read this Gemara. Says the Aruch, Rabbi Yishmael is clarifying the following. The only problem that the Mishnah had with the translation was not was not the translation of the pasuk and the application of the pasuk to the concept of intermarriage. The problem that the Mishnah had with the translation was because the translation could be understood as prohibiting a certain type of intermarriage. What do we mean? The Mishnah says, "Lo site labar ba'ar meyusa." Don't marry an ar meyusa. What's an ar meyusa? So explains the Aruch, an ar meyusa was a term that the Mishnah used to describe a Molech worshipper. You still have to come back to the fact that the Pasuk mentions Molech. So the illicit translation that the Mishnah was talking about was the Mishnah said, the Mishnah said, if you translate the Pasuk as saying, don't marry a woman who's a Molech worshipper, that's a terrible way to translate the Pasuk. Why is that a terrible way to translate the Pasuk? Because the implication of the translation is, you can't marry a Molech worshipper, but any other non-Jewish woman you're allowed to marry. Now that's, Taka, a terrible implication. And that's what Rabbi Yishmael is coming along in the Gemara to address. Rabbi Yishmael says that b'Yisrael abo akusis v'holi b'mena ben l'avodazara kosov medaber. What the Pasuk is really talking about is not someone who marries a Molech worshipper. The Pasuk is really talking about anyone who marries any non-Jewish woman. It's not limited to a Molech worshipper per se. And that actually would be a valid way of translating the Pasuk, says the Aruch. So as the Aruch says, what the Mishnah found problematic was not the translation of the Pasuk about intermarriage itself. It found problematic the notion that a translation could limit intermarriage to Molech worshippers. But if you translate the Pasuk in a way in which it prohibits intermarriage with all non-Jewish women, so that's a very legitimate and fine way of translating the Pasuk. Right, the Maharsha, the Tosfos Yom Tov, and the Tiferes Yisrael, presumably the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, is accepting the interpretation of the Aruch in the way in which he interprets the Gemara. You're right, the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel doesn't fit in with Rashi, because Rashi said the translation of the Pasuk as having anything to do with intermarriage is illicit, because you're implying that intermarriage is subject to kares and to a karban chatos. But I think, you know, the Aruch would answer, and the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel would answer, it never says in this Pasuk that the one who violates umizarach alositein lahavir lamolech is necessarily going to be subject to a korban chatos and to kares. So, you know, all we're doing is interpreting the Pasuk as speaking about intermarriage, and as long as you don't create a misimpression that the isser of intermarriage only applies to some Jewish women but not to other Jewish women, it's a perfectly fine way of interpreting the Pasuk. Certain non-Jewish women as opposed to other non-Jewish women, as long as you don't create that misimpression, so it's a perfectly legitimate and fine way of interpreting the Pasuk. In fact, the Tiferes Yisrael points out the translation of the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel and the translation of the Aruch have the following positive aspect to them. Why would you have a Pasuk in the middle of the Parsha of the Arayos that all of a sudden is talking about Avodah Zarah, that you're not supposed to worship Molech? If it's literally talking about worshipping Molech, so that is very hard to figure out what that Pasuk has to do with the rest of the Parsha. But if Mizarach Alositein Lahavir LaMolech is a euphemism, if it's a non-literal way of saying don't engage in intermarriage, so then this Pasuk fits in with the rest of the Parsha of the Arayos. It's also talking about a prohibited relationship, the same way the rest of the Psukim are speaking about that as well. So, you know, this all of these achronim suggest that the position of the Aruch is the savior over here. You know, presumably the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel was going with the Aruch's interpretation of the Gemara, and that led the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel to give what on the surface seems to be an interpretation that goes against an explicit Mishnah in Maseches Megillah. I mentioned these three Achronim, the Marsha, the Tosas Yom Tov, and the Tiferes Yisrael, again, all great Achronim who gave the same answer to, relate the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel to the interpretation of the Aruch. There is, however, another approach in explaining the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, which I think is just very fascinating because it's an insight into the way Targumim work in general. That's the approach of the Maritz Chayus in his comments to this Gemara in Megillah. Says the Maritz Chayus, while it's true that the Mishnah prohibited interpreting the Pasuk as talking about intermarriage, there's a difference between the Targum, which is recited publicly in Shul, versus a Targum which is meant for private study. Says the Maritz Chayus, when the Mishnah says, don't interpret the Pasuk as speaking about intermarriage, let's accept Rashi's interpretation of that. Namely, that you can't interpret the Pasuk as talking about intermarriage in any shape, way, or form. It's just an illicit way of interpreting the Pasuk that way. But that's when the Meturgamon gets up in Shul and publicly translates the Pasuk in that way. People are going to walk away with a misunderstanding of what the Pasuk means. The role of the Meturgamon in Shul is to give a very basic literal interpretation of the Pasuk. And says the Maritz Chayis, witness the fact that the Targum Unkulus on this Pasuk is literal. Don't give over your child for Molech worship. Very simple, straightforward. However, says the Maritz Chayis, it's perfectly legitimate to give a more elaborate and less literal interpretation of the Pasuk in a Targum that's meant for people to learn on their own in a more, let's call it a sophisticated setting, as opposed to simply the Meturgaman who's translating the Pasuk, the Psukim literally, at the time of Kriyas HaTorah. People at that point understand Shivam Panel HaTorah, there are multiple ways to interpret the Torah. And, they're not going to walk away and say, this non-literal way of interpreting the Pasuk is the only way to understand it. No, people in a study context understand that you can give multiple interpretations, and within certain limits, they can all be right. So that's the Maritz Chayis develops this idea. There are different types of Targumim. There are Targumim that are meant to be presented in Shul as a translation. There are Targumim that are meant for private study and for discussion. Perhaps we can suggest that that's the role of Targum Unkulus versus the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel. It certainly seems to be the case in this particular case. The Targum Unkulus was meant to be the Targum that would be used in Shul to translate the Psukim. That's why it's much more of a straightforward, pshat-oriented kind of Targum. The Targum Yonasan ben Uziel is meant for deeper study and deeper understanding of the Psukim, but not necessarily meant to be used at the time of Kriyas HaTorah itself. If that's correct, this Maritz Chayis is actually a very interesting window into understanding the differences between the Targumim and how they were meant to be used. Okay, Rabbi Chanan ben Akasha Omer, Ratzah HaKadosh Baruch Hu